AJ.
Hey, Larry. How are you, man?
It was, you know, yet another brutal week at work.
Man.
Yeah, I know. But what happened, somebody went a little crazy.
Uh-oh.
Picked up a big pipe wrench.
Oh,
and,
man.
And started just, like, hitting people. There was lots of blood.
That's bad. Lights
were flashing everywhere.
Oh, yeah, that's really bad. That's really scary.
I was very, very scared. My heart was beating.
Mm.
And it made me think about horror.
Yes, that sounds pretty horrible.
I wonder if those words are related.
I wonder indeed. Mm.
Anywho.
English, you saucy minx.
That's exactly right. It is a saucy minx. But it's a whole genre of speculative fiction that
we've never really talked about. We haven't talked about it really. It hasn't really shown up.
We've touched on it.
Yeah, there are a few genres that we have not given their due. And horror is one of them. But though there is... I mean, horror is an interesting sort of thing because parts of it are speculative fiction slash fantasy.
Yeah.
Parts of it are very much not.
Ooh, like what?
Like Psycho.
Uh-huh.
Is, I would say, horror. And the entire Psycho franchise, I would say, is horror.
And somewhat horrible.
Ooh. But not speculative fiction in any way.
That's true.
I mean, your standard... I'm a crazy person with a knife.
Yeah.
Which is most definitely horror.
Yeah, it would be a very horrible situation to be in.
Right.
Yeah.
Does not involve anything supernatural, fantasy elements, no mad science. It's usually just crazy person, knife,
stab. There's some mental instability.
Yes. Sleepaway camp.
Right.
It's just horror.
Right.
It's also terrifying.
Yes.
Yeah. But then again...
But it moves into... specifically, Jason moves into...
Well, that's what I was going to say. But then, with, you know, the three... I would say the three sort of corner piece franchises...
Uh-huh.
Nightmare on Elm Street,
uh-huh.
which begins speculative fiction, that it lives in a fantastical world. Friday the 13th, which begins as straight horror, but by the end of the first movie... has launched into some sort of speculative fiction-y land.
I guess with the coming out of the water. Because,
Jason appears up out of the water having been dead.
Right.
And then Halloween, which I would say after two...
Starting with three,
three doesn't count, because three is totally separate. Three is absolutely speculative fiction.
I thought two was the one that didn't...
No.
That wasn't a part
Halloween
of the...
Halloween 3 is Season of the Witch. Halloween 2 is just a continuation, but by that point, Michael Myers has somehow become unkillable.
I think he prefers the term immortal.
Well...
Last time I...
I don't know. Is he immortal? I don't know. He's unkillable. It doesn't mean he's not going to age and die like a normal human being.
That's a good point. I would have suspected that if you're unkillable, like old age would not kill you.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
I don't know any. Is there another example of someone that was unkillable, who died of a natural old age?
That's a good point.
I can't think of anybody.
Mm.
I mean, obviously not real people.
No, not real people. I'm trying to think of the.
But I don't think.
I mean, Rasputin did turn out to be killable.
Barely.
We think.
Mm.
Dun dun dun.
But anyway, I don't know.
Maybe he's immortal. I don't. I feel like we don't have enough variables.
I think he will be immortal until the franchise does not make any money.
Right, which has stopped making money for some time.
Yeah, yeah. Even
which
with
is
the
why
reboots.
There hasn't been any. Yeah, there was the reboot, but there's no follow up on the reboot.
Yeah. See, it's interesting because I think for me, like the horror movies that I like that I find myself returning to. Are certainly the ones that have more supernatural elements to them. Well, here's a question that just occurred to me. It has clearly a supernatural element. The Sixth Sense, horror movie or not horror movie?
Ooh. Horror movie.
Why?
It does rely on a pervasive sense of dread.
Uh-huh.
It does feature at least two, if not three, jump scares.
Uh-huh.
and it is about ghosts.
Right.
I feel like when you're dealing with supernatural madmen,
uh-huh.
mad doctors,
mm-hmm.
ghosts,
mm-hmm.
or creatures, you're in a horror movie.
Unnatural creatures.
Unnatural creatures.
Unrealistic.
Right.
unrealistic. Right.
Whereas, like, Alien is, to my mind, first and foremost a horror movie, and then a science fiction movie second.
Yeah, for me, it's definitely a horror movie. I wouldn't even necessarily call it a science fiction film. I would call the science fiction merely the context in which it exists. Like,
right.
It's the trappings.
I give you that.
Not necessary. I mean, it obviously requires an alien, but I think it's not.
And an android.
But I would argue, like, those are, like, for me, like, science fiction, kind of like you're exploring an idea. Strange new places, planets, blah, 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 blah. Alien is not really exploring that.
No, not at all.
Alien, the context is merely they're in outer space and something is trying to kill them.
Yes.
It could be on a train or a plane.
Yep.
A bus traveling at 50 miles an hour.
55.
Though that would be a really short movie for the alien. I think the alien would win very quickly. Unless they put him out the back door.
And even then.
And you just hit the highway and spin away.
Even then. They're very tough.
But, like, I like the sense of dread in movies. You know,
the,
like,
pervasive sense of dread.
Yeah, those are the movies. Because, like, jump scares and slasher films, I've never been a huge fan of. Because, like, I have to admit, I kind of giggle. Like,
oh, really?
I remember, I think it was The Ring. Yeah, it was The Ring. I remember seeing it, and we were in somebody's living room. It was late at night. We were all watching it on video, and just the scene where, like, the horses go crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, like, to me, it was, like, bad CGI horses. And
right.
I was just laughing my ass off.
Wow.
And I think seeing the guy with, like, in the tub with, like, the horse bit in his mouth, I'm like, that's funny.
It was
I found it funny.
Then he electrocuted himself, and it was terrifying.
I was already kind of laughing.
Wow.
Maybe I'm just a dark soul.
You apparently are a dark soul, because let me tell you, I don't like the jump scares work on me as well as they do, and yet they work on me every time.
Yeah.
That's honestly one of the things about The Sixth Sense and it's amazing that, like, M. Night Shyamalan did his career took the turn that it took.
Yeah.
Because The Sixth Sense is so well made.
Yeah. Yeah.
That when I saw it well after sort of the, like, heat of it had died down. I knew the twist going in.
All right.
Not only enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah.
He still, because he pulls off the, this we were just saying about a different movie, he pulls off the same trick twice.
Yeah, yeah.
And when, I don't know if you've seen it. Well, at this point, everyone should have seen The Sixth Sense. But towards the end of it, there's a bit where Haley Joel Osment is getting ready for a school event, and he's talking to a teacher in the little dressing room, and then, like, his teacher comes to get him, and the other teacher's walking out, and she asks him, who's he talking to? And the woman turns, and you see half her face is all burned up.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh my god, it was a ghost. And I should have known that.
Yeah.
I should have known.
I should have learned my lesson.
And it still totally worked on me. Still totally got me jumping.
Yeah, no, it's a really good movie.
Yeah.
One movie that for some reason has stuck with me I don't want to reveal my age, so I'm just going to say it has stuck with me for the 50 years since I've seen it. I'm looking good for 60.
You are. Incredible.
It's a movie called Demon Seed.
Ooh.
Have you ever seen it?
Not in a long time.
It's the one where the woman is trapped in her house by the computer, by the AI.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. I probably saw it when I was, like, 6 years old.
Yeah, I was totally homesick. Remember. That was terrifying.
It was totally terrifying. This was before cable channels. I mean, some cable channels. But I saw this movie, like, I was homesick.
Yeah.
I don't remember my mom was around, but I watched this whole movie. And, like, it was utterly terrifying. This poor woman trapped in this house by this robotic artificial intelligence. And what freaked me out, and I still remember it, because somehow, and I don't remember how it works, but somehow the machine house impregnated her.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Yeah, and she gives birth to, like, this shiny metallic thing, and then they pick off the metal skin, and it's a baby. It's a totally human baby, and the baby goes, "I'm alive," and that's where the movie ends.
Wow!
And it still
freaks
me out, and I have not seen it in decades.
Holy crap!
I was like, "What?" I think it's Julie Christie, and, like, it just utterly terrified me.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Because basically, like, the computer rapes her.
Yeah.
Like, it is horrific.
Oh, my God.
I don't remember any jump scares in it. But it was just the idea.
Right.
Of something beyond your own control.
Right.
You know, exerting their force over you.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
And I find that utterly terrifying. Which much is... more than, like, the video girl coming out of the TV screen all wacky-wacky.
Right.
It's like...
But, I mean, like, with that fundamental thing, the thing beyond your control,
yeah.
this primal force of nature or whatever you want to call it or whatever it is, this
yeah.
monster, this inexorable thing coming after you yeah. is... I mean, that is the heart of horror. That's the heart of our
yeah.
terror of the dark. I mean, the last couple of years, we've been lucky in that there's been this sort of new vogue of these, like, artsy-fartsy... well, artsy-fartsy sounds bad, because
yeah,
actually
yeah.
I love them all.
Yeah, yeah,
but these, like, well-made...
Artfully really crafted.
Artfully crafted horror films.
Yeah.
Like The Babadook and It
After
Follows.
Very good things. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Both of which, I mean... talk about pervasive senses of dread.
Yeah.
Particularly in It Follows,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't know how much you've heard about
I've heard a little bit about it.
And you haven't seen it.
I have not seen it.
It's so good.
I
hesitate.
I'm married to a person that does not like scary
oh
things,
God.
So I have to, like, find my, my own time.
Oh, it's so great. And it just really capitalizes. There are a couple of jump scares in it, but it mostly just capitalizes on this unsettling... otherworldly sense
yeah.
of a world a little out of skew.
Yeah.
You know?
Obviously, we've talked a lot about movies. Mm-hmm. What about books or TV shows? Are they... Because, like, I've never gotten on... I'm thinking, obviously the most popular horror show right now would be Walking Dead.
Well, I suppose, yes.
You know,
Walking
I mean, but
Dead, American Horror Story.
American Horror Story. There's The Strain.
Yep.
But I didn't get on board with Walking Dead. I checked out a few episodes in.
I couldn't, you know? I checked out of both the comic book and the show at the same point.
Yeah.
And I've yet to see anything that's made me want to go back.
Yeah.
Because there's a level of nihilism
mm-hmm.
that I simply cannot withstand. And there's a sense, and interestingly, because the book and the comic books and the show diverge very much in many ways. But they still come to this one climactic moment where terrible, terrible things happen, which happens all the time in it.
Yep.
But it's so terrible, and at this particular juncture where it's like, these people's lives is never going to get any better than this.
Yeah, yeah. This is it. This is
this is what this is yeah, going yeah. to be forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Forever, I'm going to watch them find somewhere that's decent.
Yeah.
And watch it be destroyed and taken away from them.
Because they are the Walking Dead.
I know.
Zombies.
And like that,
I
can't hack with that.
There was a British show, oddly it was a remake of an earlier British show called Survivors.
Oh yeah, I've heard about it.
And the more recent version they only did two series of. And it's kind of the reason like why I couldn't get on board with The Walking Dead. Because in Survivors, basically like some flu-like disease wipes out 90% of the population
mm-hmm.
like overnight, like
right.
just rapidly, and quite rapidly society breaks down tremendously, and
right.
people start compromising their ethics and morals quite quickly,
right?
And it's scary. It's scary, like yeah. what would you do in
right.
that situation? Though of course, would that be science fiction or horror? Ooh.
I mean, there's a I don't know, I feel like there is that middle ground of that.
Yeah.
And certainly in film, there was, around the time of Aliens, there were a bunch of those other sort of science fiction-y horror, like
yeah,
Demon
yeah,
Seed
crossing
or
genre. Yeah, yeah.
Saturn 3.
Oh, I have a fondness for Saturn 3, but I have not rewatched it in a long
God,
time.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Kirk Douglas,
robot.
Farrah Fawcett, and Harvey Keitel.
And Harvey Keitel.
Who puts his brain in the robot.
Yeah. Oh.
And I think they dubbed Harvey Keitel's voice in that.
Probably.
If I'm not mistaken, they dubbed his voice because he had such a thick New York accent.
Of course.
Which you would think, like, hey, he's an actor. He can maybe do a different accent. But I'm almost positive they did it. But that robot is pretty badass.
Yeah, the robot's super creepy looking.
Yeah.
Oh then, that terrified me as
like,
a kid.
But, like, Farrah Fawcett and old Kirk Douglas as husband-wife
yeah.
is a little creepy,
it's
too.
A little much. So, yeah.
But as an early 80s
yeah.
movie, it's not...
Not good.
It's one of those movies... Well, I wasn't going to say it wasn't good.
No,
it's up there with, like, Outland.
Oh, yeah. That's a fun movie.
That's a fun movie. I think Saturn 3 is a fun movie. It's not particularly... It's not going to be
Right.
Great. But if you stumble on it on TV,
watch it. Take a
look. You should watch it.
Take a look. You'll see a super creepy robot.
Just see for the creepy robot with Harvey Keitel's
really
brain.
Creepy. Yeah. But yeah, I feel like there's that middle ground of, you know, the Reanimator.
Oh yeah.
Those sort of like weird science horror movies.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have to talk about Lovecraft at some point.
Exactly. I mean, I was going to say, in terms of books, like, I grew up on Stephen King.
Yeah, yeah.
And that definitely lives in that space.
Yeah, yeah.
Most recently, talk about great. Oh, my God. I started reading Stephen King's son's books.
I have a copy of Nosferatu.
Yep, which is great.
I really want to read that. I'm so excited to read those.
That book was so good. But he has another book, Heart-Shaped Box, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, literally, just, and it's hard to explain, like, what's so scary about it.
Yeah.
Plot-wise, it's about an aging rock star who has a collection of, he collects macabre things.
Uh-huh.
And he buys a ghost on the internet. So his assistant finds this woman is selling a suit that she claims is haunted by her stepfather.
Uh-huh.
And so he buys it, and sure enough, is haunted by the ghost.
Yeah.
Who turns out to have an agenda, and it's really, 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 really great. But there's this description in it, and I still can't quite process why it was so terrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you actually see the ghost, they describe the eyes as having been scratched out on a piece of paper.
Hmm.
So you could almost see the ink squirrels over where the eyes are supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just, there's something chilling about that. And again, something chilling about this inexorable force coming after you that you could not avoid. God, that book is great. And he's got a great collection of short stories, 20th Century Ghosts, that also... Scary and weird.
Read it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the problem with ebooks. You're like, I'm going to buy that, and then like, because it's not a physical object in front of you, like, it's easy to like find yourself like, oh, I got 30 ebooks on my iPad.
Trust me, I know the feeling. But I went on like a tear.
Yeah.
Where I read 20th Century Ghosts, and then Heart-Shaped Box, Nosferatu, and then Horns. Which is also really good, and a fine film.
Which I was just about to say, which they made with Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe, and it's a good movie. But right. It's just,
yeah.
There's that whole genre. I used to read, it's so funny, when I was very young, I have a really, really, really clear memory of this. When I was like 11 or 12, I think I was 12, because I was aware of what had happened to me.
Okay.
I was left by my parents alone for the evening for whatever reason, and I went to the video store, and I had a crush on the girls who worked at the video store, Video Junction, in Leonia, New Jersey.
Because who wouldn't have a crush?
Who wouldn't? They were
the video store girl.
Oh my God, they were great. They were sisters, and they were sort of like the sisters from Heart, except trashier.
Trashier?
Oh yeah.
Well, I guess it was New Jersey.
It was New Jersey in the 80s, so... You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And somehow they convinced me. Not they had convinced me. I wanted to impress them. I'd hung out there for a long time. And I rented, like, all of these movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, 7 movies or something obscene like that. And they were all old horror films.
Uh-huh.
And I came back to my parents' house to watch them alone. And I started with Dracula.
Uh-huh.
The original black and white Dracula.
The Todd Browning one, yeah.
And I was too... I turned on literally every light in the house.
Yeah.
And then was still too scared to finish it. I was such a scaredy cat that I could not sit in that house alone and finish the movie. I'm pretty sure that I made at least one, if not 2 or 3, frantic phone calls to my parents at whatever dinner party they were at to tell them how terrified I was. And also that I had spent, like, $20 at the video store. I was a scaredy cat, but something happened in the next year or two.
Yeah.
And like, I turned the corner and became the kind of kid who bought Fangoria.
Uh-huh.
Like, I used to read Fangoria on the regular and went to horror movies all the time.
What do you think happened? What was the conversion?
I don't know. Like, I'm not entirely sure what it all was. I'm sure some of it had to do with reading more Stephen King, because mm-hmm. That was like my main go-to reading, and a few other of the sort of like light YA horror people, uh-huh. Lois Duncan, and who was a big part of my formative years reading Lois Duncan books, and I don't know,
because I have this conversation with my wife, like she's not interested in anything scary. She's like, why would you want to watch something scary? That doesn't sound like fun.
Right.
But, of course, she loves roller coasters.
Ah, see, I don't like roller coasters.
I don't like roller coasters either.
No.
The illusion of not being in control utterly terrifies me in an unpleasant way.
Yeah, no.
I remember WGN out of Chicago on New Year's Day. For years, they would do marathons mm-hmm. of, like, one director. So, like, 1 year would be Hitchcock, and this 1 year it was Kubrick.
Oh, wow.
And they showed all these movies. And I guess I had no life in the winter, so I would sit and watch all of these movies. And, like, The Shining started at about midnight.
Oh.
And that was my first time seeing it. Now, everyone was in the house, but I was upstairs at the TV next to my bedroom. My brother's bedroom was a little bit away. And that was the night that I discovered my brother would sometimes talk in his sleep.
Oh, God.
So I'm watching, buckets of blood falling out of elevators, and my brother's going, mama, 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 in the other room.
Oh.
I'm just like, are you fucking kidding me? I cannot. I didn't turn it off.
That's terrifying.
But I was utterly terrified. And I think if I turned it off, I think if I stopped watching it, I think I would have been more freaked out.
Absolutely.
Because I think what's nice, like, for the most part in horror films, and in horror novels and things like that, the horror is defeated.
Right, right.
You know.
That is always the thing.
Unless, of course, it's a successful franchise, then the horror will come back.
Right, the end, question mark.
But, like, ultimately, and I think, for me, that's, like, what's different for horror films than science fiction. Like, science fiction's exploring an idea, or, in a lot of cases, exploring, like, why we shouldn't do this kind of science. You know, a cautionary tale. But horror delves into why we are afraid of the dark, as you were saying earlier, and like why, and ultimately by the end, like, well, you can stand up to
mm-hmm.
the dark.
Right.
You know, we are not beasts. We are we could be brave people, but nevertheless, like, the horror is always there. You know, it's kind of like Apocalypse Now. Not technically a horror film, but utterly terrifying.
Oh my God, totally terrifying.
Totally terrifying.
Yeah,
but like it's our. It's the very Joseph Campbell
mm-hmm.
psychic. We need to defeat this mythic creature or spirit or memory that's haunting us, in order to step into the light. That's like why all horror movies take place at night, because the night is scary,
and that's
and
the night's when you have to deal with these things. And like that's the great thing about the modern vogue of these indie horror films mm-hmm. is that the very successful ones are very, very much about specific human emotions translated
the loss of the
in
child
the Babadook is entirely and very clearly about what it feels like to grieve and what it feels like to lose someone and the monster that unleashes inside of you. And It Follows is to a certain degree, like on a surface level, about like sex,
mm-hmm.
Since it's sort of about the best way to describe it is about a sexually transmitted curse,
right?
But it's underneath it is also about like the terror, like the thing that sex signifies for teenagers, adulthood.
Yeah, the terror of growing up.
The terror of growing up, but translated into this monster that stalks you after you've had sex.
Yeah,
until you have sex with someone else. And pass it on.
Perfect.
And it's just, oh my God,
it's
so great.
I feel like in the 80s, they weren't necessarily super scary movies by my adult perspective. But like, I'm thinking like Gremlins. The original Gremlins. And like, where children or young adults were the victims. And these are like PG movies. So the kids were going, And they were kind of, they were scary. They don't quite make them anymore. Now it feels like horror films are kind of relegated only for adult. And I read, it was around because Goonies had the anniversary recently, and they were talking about, like, well, Goonies couldn't be made now, or E.T. couldn't be made now, because, like, no kid would understand, like, how their parent would just let them go out on a bike somewhere.
Right, exactly.
Find an alien or find a treasure map or anything like that. So no one would get it.
Yeah.
And, like, and I just wonder, like, oh, are there... But I can't really think of any horror movies. Well, I mean, there was the R.L. Stein movie recently.
Yeah,
with Goosebumps. Jack Black. Goosebumps thing. Could not remember. I mean, I remember the, well, I remember the TV show. Or Erie, Pennsylvania.
I vaguely remember it. Well... Because, I mean, I'm a little older than you, so the TV shows that I remember, the horror shows, such a... And this is the other thing I would say also about the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the 80s was obviously a kind of golden age of horror.
Why do you say... Why do you say well, then is a golden age rather than
well, there was
perhaps
a,
now?
Like... Or, I don't know, whatever. What goes golden age, silver age, like... You know,
perhaps it's the bronze.
There was the golden age of, you know, the 1930s of the Todd Brown
horror.
And the Universal Monsters. Maybe all the way up to, like, the 50s and the early sort of Atomic Panic and Thing from Another World and blah, blah, blah. Not Thing from Another World and Them and all of those movies, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
This Island Earth.
This Island Earth.
Yeah.
And then, like, the 70s and even to a point the early 80s, all that sort of died away. Like...
Yeah, I mean, like the Hammer films were probably like the last gasp of horror films, and they were all mostly the 60s.
Yeah, and they were they were very different until sort of the rise of John Carpenter.
Yeah.
And, you know, out of sort of the schlocky teenage sleepaway camp came, like, in the 80s, this flowering of, and I think you're exactly right, that because there was this sort of massive teenagehood that was largely unsupervised. And while there were ratings, they weren't very well enforced.
Yeah, I don't remember anyone
movies
ever enforcing
were cheap,
anything. Yeah.
And you could just sort of, like, go to see movies, and they were dependent upon, as they always have been, teenage audiences to keep them going. So, like, there was, you know, I mean, that's, again, that's when Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, all those things happened, Sam Raimi, those directors, like, John Carpenter, all of those, like... horror, schlocky horror directors like bubbled up, and then it also bubbled, you know, down into TV, because I grew up on Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh yeah,
every week I could get an hour of horror, like, and sometimes
Tales from the Crypt
that was like later and slicker, but Tales from the Dark Side.
I remember Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh my god,
great anthology.
Oh,
show.
There's one that I didn't realize at the time was based on a short story that like. Haunts me to this day. It's so terrifying. About this little girl, the short story is all told in her first person, and she's, I don't know, 6 or 7, and obviously a little slow, but she has the ability to tell when someone's gonna die. Like walk, and she sort of narrates that she just gets a strange feeling, and she goes up to someone and says, "Goodbye, grandma. Goodbye. Goodbye, grandma. Goodbye." And then grandma dies. And by the end of the story, she has done this to enough people, she's freaked everyone out.
Yeah.
And, God, this final image is so, so chilling and so great. I think she's wound up stuck with her aunt, who doesn't know what to do with her, and is totally terrified. And the aunt has told her, like, okay, we're going to go to the beach, go put your bathing suit on. And she goes, she puts her bathing suit on, and you show the aunt filling up an inner tube with sand.
Oh, no.
And the little girl looking at herself in the mirror, and the mirror starts filling up with water. And she's saying, "Goodbye, me. Goodbye, me. Goodbye. It's like, this is so terrifying and heartbreaking. Oh, my God. And it was like, I felt like there was a time when that was just available at all times. There was a Friday the 13th series.
Yeah, I was just bringing out, which was totally not related to the movie franchise at all. It was all about recovering haunted objects.
Yes.
Which is kind of rebooted into Warehouse 13 in
basically,
a certain
But this lived quite very terrifying. Much in the realm of horror.
That one had an ongoing story. Tales from the Dark Side were all with anthology.
It was anthology.
Same with Tales of the Crypt.
Same with Nightmare on Elm Street, the series, was anthology.
Oh, that's right, I forgot.
Where Freddy was sort of the host.
Didn't they also... No, I'm confusing the movie with the show, because I thought they did do some stories about Freddy within the show.
They did some. Sometimes he was the host. I remember the first one they did an origin story of him.
Okay.
And he was still going around killing the people who killed him.
Right. I remember that episode. Yeah, these were like in the 80s, and like I remember going, when we took trips to my grandmother's house, then for some reason I could watch them. like because I was more unsupervised or something. Yeah. But here's the question. So those are clearly horror. What about Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits?
Most definitely. I mean, those
Outer
are precursors.
Limits. Yeah, yeah.
Horror, absolutely.
You think they're horror?
I think yes. Like Twilight Zone. Twilight Zone gets a little iffy because they're so moralistic.
Yeah, yeah. They always have a moral.
But
you know, but I mean like the one with William Shatner.
Yeah, the monsters are mulberries. I mean, yeah. It's like to serve man. is I would because again, it's an, yeah, yeah. I'm gonna just talk about like our childhood traditions.
Yeah,
you know, I grew up. This was before it went to science to sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah.
Sci-fi channel. When I was a kid, Channel 11 played the Twilight Zone marathon every New Year's Day.
Yeah,
and it's like it's a local thing that they were doing, and I still watch it to this day when it's on, and I try to watch. And this last time I caught most of To Serve Man, I'm like, this actually is really legitimately terrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you just accept it. Like, if I did not know what this was all about, this is freaky as shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, yeah, no, absolutely horror.
Because I think there's, like,
Some episodes
are more like O. Henry twist. Like, the guy that has the bet where he won't talk for a year.
Right.
He's in the glass case. And, yep. And you know. Well, I don't have the money. Oh no, I've cut out my vocal cords.
I knew it was going to be impossible. No. I cut out my vocal cords.
But then, like obviously, the one with William Shatner and the gremlin on the plane.
The one with the camera.
Which one's the camera one?
Oh, where the like dirt bags steal a camera.
Uh huh.
And they learn it takes pictures of the future.
Oh.
And it leads to again, classic ending. They all turn on each other.
Yeah. As criminals do.
Two of them fall out the window. The remaining criminal, in triumph, takes a picture of their dead bodies. The picture pops out. She's looking at it. Wait, why are there three bodies? She says as she backs up and falls out the window.
Irony.
Irony. Oh, my. And, like, all the ones that everyone wants to make fun of, like the one where the gambler can't lose and he thinks he's gone to heaven, but no.
Nope.
He's in the other place.
And there's always, like, the very special episodes of TV shows. Like,
what?
I'm thinking, there's this particular episode of Next Generation that I'm thinking of, which was supposed to be scary.
Which one?
Some
of them are actually scary.
Well, it's the one where there's one that I can think of Next Generation that is actually legitimately scary to me. But the one that is, to my mind, supposed to be scary that is kind of weirdly funny. Of course, there's, I think, a transporter accident.
Right.
I know that won't narrow it down.
No.
But people start devolving.
Oh, that one's so silly.
Yeah.
That's not scary. That one's silly.
But I think it's supposed to be scary.
I feel like it's...
I think it's... I mean,
no.
they have a fly-like creature.
Yeah, no. Oh, the fly.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, oh, we should totally talk about the
fly.
Oh, my
God, the fly. David Cronenberg's The Fly.
And the original one has...
The original one is really good.
The original one has the creepy ending.
That's
where,
right.
Where the fly has the human hand going, help me! Help me! Like, if that's all you've seen, that is so creepy.
I just like the concept of all that is terrifying, but the Jeff Goldblum one is so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's utterly brilliant. And it's a good mix of, like...
Yeah.
I mean, it is a good example of science fiction as, you know... moral story of, like,
right.
Perhaps you shouldn't delve into these mysteries of science.
No, you shouldn't.
You know,
or perhaps you should just, I don't know, clean your fucking instrument. that's really the moral of the story
perhaps
here.
Perhaps you should have checked to see if there was a fly in your tube
before. Maybe you should not be an asshole,
so,
Jeff Goldblum.
So it's a tale of assholes, of a stupid asshole scientist.
Which is, you know, what most
got
mad...
exactly what he deserved.
Exactly. Most mad science stories...
They're mad scientists.
Yeah. Are mostly you're an asshole and you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, yeah.
And culminating in, God damn it, Deep Blue Sea.
I've only seen clips of that on YouTube and only scene with Samuel L. Jackson.
Well, yes, everyone see that, but like the core concept of this movie, the core idea of it is a woman takes sharks, nature's perfect killing machine, and increases their brain size.
What
and
could go
somehow
wrong?
Doesn't think this is going to end terribly for everyone. guess what? It ends terribly for everyone.
Aren't they in an underwater base or something?
Yeah. They're in an underwater. It's just like, what? You made sharks smarter?
Yeah. This is why you should
God damn it, woman.
You should make sharks when you're in, like, in the desert.
Yeah.
And you have a swimming pool full of sharks.
Exactly.
Because then you're like, I'm going to go to the desert.
I'm just going to walk 20 feet over there, and you're good.
Oh, no. Flop around there. Yep. You might be so smart, but you're dead now. Stupid scientists.
So, horror. It's great. Oh, wait. We have to pause for our sponsor.
Well, the sponsor could be wrapping it up, too.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up with our sponsor.
All right.
Greetings from Camp Crystal Lake, which is a lovely, lovely camp for your children to go to and maybe never return.
Before we go, there's also comedy horror.
There's also comedy horror, and there's also there's another can of worms we can open here as well.
Okay.
In addition to comedy horror, Sam Raimi is clearly the king of.
Yeah, all right. I'm like going,
He's got
Ivan Reitman.
Ivan Reitman,
nah,
but
the king. He's not the king. He's not the king. He's got one.
No, I mean, Ivan Reitman wrote, there's one great comedy film that almost counts as horror.
There's some, I'm assuming we're talking about Evolution.
I had forgotten about Evolution.
I just crushed it.
You did crush it.
Ghostbusters.
Right.
But there's actually, I think, some, like, the scene in the library at the beginning.
Yeah, no, there's some legitimately scary, and this is what I was going to say, there are other things that use tropes and bits and pieces of horror to tell stories.
Yeah.
There are parts of, like, A Song of Ice and Fire that would most definitely count
as horror.
Yeah. There's zombies in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of magic, but then there are also, you know, crazy, terrible things that happen to people that are, you know, perpetrated by other people.
We could say Lord of the Rings has some horror moments
There are moments of that pervasive sense of dread, that monsters on the loose, that once there's a monster, we didn't really talk about Lovecraft.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, oh yeah, we haven't talked about Lovecraft.
Wrote all of those books that are all basically just a metaphor for losing his mind.
Yeah, I mean, like, what's interesting about Lovecraft, besides his tremendous amount of racism.
Yes. tremendous
amount of racism.
Massive amounts of racism.
Yeah, that might be a better word. Yes. Massive amounts of racism.
All your heroes are problematic.
Yeah, basically. But he, you know, what I like about Lovecraft and what people have kind of used of Lovecraft is like the horror beyond imagination.
Right.
The thing that if you see it, you will go mad, basically. Mm-hmm. The ancient ones that, you know, and it's, in a weird way, that's how it kind of connects to science fiction, is because, like, there are beings from either this universe or another universe who are thousands and thousands of years old, and we worship them as gods. But they are alien beings in some way, but because they are so much larger, not necessarily in a physical form, but so much larger that we can't understand them, and we go mad when we try.
Right.
Like Cthulhu and
we
all of that.
We cannot accurately conceive of them because they are so alien and so beyond anything we can understand.
Yeah.
It breaks your brain.
Yeah, and so, like, reading...
And also horrible. That's the other thing, is that they're not kindly.
Yeah, they're not kind ancient
these
ones.
These are some angry... rivers of blood, lakes of fire.
Yeah, dogs and cats.
We're eating all your souls.
Right. And when I find, like, pervasive sense of dread reading him, like, there are these, you know... They're very... unsettling stories in a, you know, novel or two.
Right.
You know, and then there's the tremendous amount of racism.
Right.
Let us not forget.
Let us not gloss over. But that I feel like is still a thing that horror reaches for.
Yeah.
That hugeness of the thing that is so far beyond us we can't actually imagine it.
Yeah. I'm not a particularly religious person, but what I like about horror is that it, in ways that science fiction I don't think addresses, like, the depths of our psyche.
Mm-hmm.
I think horror touches on it in really interesting ways. And, you know, it's sometimes fun to have that sense of dread.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like... I love, I'm not a huge jump scare kind of fan, so I don't really turn to Jason and Freddy and stuff like that. Though I have to admit, I thoroughly enjoy Jason 10.
Jason in Space.
I have a fondness for that movie. I do have a fondness for Freddy versus Jason.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I prefer the older black and white. Like, there's something about a movie in black and white.
Right.
You know, late at night watching,
Yeah, and see, I still go back to... I like the old black and white, but I go back to my 1980s horror.
Yeah.
Like, I could watch The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing,
every
single day, and just enjoy the fuck out of it.
Yeah.
Enjoy the fuck out of every time Keith David says, what is this, voodoo bullshit?
I think anything that Keith David is in...
Ain't got no time for no voodoo bullshit.
I love Keith David.
Yeah.
Did you have... and if you say no, we can end it right now. But did you have a local horror movie host?
No, not that I remember.
Oh.
No,
out of Chicago, we had Sven Gulli.
No.
He was WGN. And actually, technically, he was son of Sven Gulli. And he was
We didn't have a specific host.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Elvira was out there in the world.
Yeah.
And we had Chiller Theater.
Oh, okay.
Which didn't have a host, but it had this funky little... graphic of a hand coming up out of a grave.
Ooh.
That was Chiller Theater on Saturday afternoons. And sometimes it wasn't horror.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was kung fu movies.
That makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
I like Sven Gulli. He had sketches, and they always made fun of a suburb of Chicago called Berwyn.
Yeah.
So anytime Berwyn would be mentioned, like rubber chickens would come and go, Berwyn! I've never been to Berwyn, but
I'm sure it's full of rubber chickens.
Time, yeah, it was great. It was great.
Yeah.
All right. Have we crushed it?
I think we crushed it. I think that was the best podcast we've ever done.
All right. Thanks again to Heidi.
Thank you, Heidi.
Who will make us sound better.
Yes,
so
please.
You can tweet us at Deep Cut Nerd Pod.
Please do.
All right.
Your questions, your favorite horror movies.
Or not.
Or not. Or not. Or whatever.
Yeah, whatever. We're cool. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Baby, I'm afraid of a lot of things, but I ain't scared of loving you. Baby, I know you're afraid of a lot of things, but don't be scared of love, 'cause people will say all kinds of things that don't mean a damn to me. 'Cause all I see is what's in front of me. And that